When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth. The fountain of truth about what? Well, the fountain of truth about aging. And aging has been in the news. Aging has been an issue. Aging is coming up for a full week review at the United Nations when they look at the working group on aging. And it is an open-ended working group. What does that mean? It means that groups from all over the United Nations with many missions and many concerns get together for about a week, specifically to see how what they are doing deals with aging. We will be there on the ground, and we will be reporting to you. In addition to that, we have our new podcast called On the Ground, and it is the podcast of the Global Communications Executive Committee of the United Nations. We're up to episode 5, and you're going to want to listen to that very specifically because it is very inspirational. And for those of you who are interested in creating a newsletter, you're going to hear how a small group of NGOs, nonprofit organization, has created a newsletter that is really floating around the world and getting messages out about aging. But for today, we're going to talk about something that is very intimate, very important to every one of us, and that is, what is our role? You know, retirement has been called the roleless role and has been much criticized because of that. And I can tell you, I just took a look. There are now just under 11,000 pickleball courts in the United States. Why? Because it takes up a lot of time. And we are living longer. But the challenge is, what are you going to do with your time? Is this going to become pickleball nation? Well, one person who absolutely says no, you can transition into a worthwhile life, share your experience with the world, is our guest today. His name is John Karabas. He is the author of That Think You Do, 60 Ways to Be Healthy, Happy, and Hold Off Harm. But he's also the author of 25 novels and hundreds of articles. And he started in a very different world and was able to make the transition to a healthy, happy, and very contributory next stage. Thanks for being with us today, Joseph.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. So one of the things that we've sort of briefly met, you and I, because we're both going to be contributors and experts to a group called Baby Boomers .org, and babyboomers.org started with the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. But when I asked you a little bit earlier, since you write sci-fi, you write self-help books, many articles, and you're in the world of research and marketing and how people think about their choices in life, how did you make this transition from a sort of traditional, though I don't think you've ever really been traditional, but a career to becoming a writer? How did you make that transition?
Well, I guess I would qualify as a serial entrepreneur, which means basically I was unemployed with a briefcase.
Very good.
I did have three companies. Thank you. I did have three companies. The last two companies, my wife and I were developed. And the last company was successful in many ways, unsuccessful in a few others, as every company will be. And when it came time to get out of business, because we were tired. We were tired of traveling as much as we had to for business and speaking and all that kind of stuff. Even though I'm speaking now, hey, you know, everything happens again. Got tired and it was time to leave. Okay, fine. And we were at the point we had enough money that we could be successful and retire. And that lasted for a week, which right. My wife said,
exactly.
Yeah, my wife, Susan, my beloved, she said, I've never seen you happier than when you were writing your stories. So I want you to do that the rest of your life. And I said, oh, shucks, darn. Oh, my gosh. Now, the truth is, I've been telling my stories since I was in grade school, and got actually paid for them starting in the 1970s, which is a sure indication I'm in the baby boomer generation. She said, go for it. Okay. So I had a bunch of stories that had been published back in the days of print, when print was king. And I said, well, I'll put these together in a book and see if anybody cares, everybody's interested. Got great reviews. I had a bunch of novels that I had completed but never published. So I put one out and got great reviews. And I started getting emails from people, and people reaching out to me on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and so on and so forth. So I came to the conclusion that I could either pursue this. There was an interest. I was providing something. People were genuinely interested. Or I could, you know, go to the pickleball courts.
Yes.
And I always enjoyed meeting people, talking with people, learning about them, hearing their stories. So, okay, fine. And as you mentioned, I now have a good number of books out there. I'm getting published. I'll be, of all things, I'll be having a poem published in a few months. And I never thought of myself as a poet. But to me, that's one of those things that, as we were saying earlier, you've lived a rich life. I don't care who you are. I don't care what circumstances you've had. You've gotten this far. Congratulations. Share it, because there are people who want to know your story. And there you go.
And absolutely. And of course, one of the great tragedies is that we may lose the legacy of our experience. I was on a meeting today. Yeah. And that's a terrible thing. I was on a meeting today where we're talking about how to get a convention for the rights of older adults. And one of the leaders at the meeting said, you know, we don't say older, who's older anymore. We take a look at experience. We say, who's the more experienced? And that's such a beautiful new twist on that. Now, let's use that as a bridge to talk a little bit about your book. The name of the book, of course, it's on Amazon, is That Think, with a K, not Thing, That Think You Do, 60 Ways to Be Healthy, Happy, and Hold Off Harm. Now, in fact, this is a compendium of many of Joseph's blogs and other articles, all in one place. And I want you to talk about Joseph, not just from the point of view of the book and its contents, which is really extraordinary, but also because it's gutsy. You really did not write a novel here. You've got novels. This is not a novel. This shows people and everybody listening that if you do have something to say, there are many creative ways of putting it together and making a book. So let's talk about the content and also your process in creating this particular book.
I'll do my best. The process, the last company that Susan and I ran, it was based primarily on neuroscience and anthropology and sociology, psychology. And we blended all these disciplines together to come up with solutions for marketing, for communicating, for sharing. So I used to do research. I mean, I was very heavily reading, meeting people, talking, learning, watching how they functioned. And as I'm doing all this research, I suddenly said, you know, this would make a very interesting thing to tell people, because here's something that is from the lab, if you will, which really applies. You can put this into your daily life. You know, for example, there's a segment in there, I think the opening chapter of the book is about change, how to deal with change in your life. Well, there are some actual things that you can do to help yourself deal with change. There are some people who don't like change. They don't like transformation. They don't, no, that's bad. Okay, recognize that. You can do things slowly. You can adapt one thing at a time. You can learn to embrace change. It takes a little bit of doing, but here are the steps to do it. One of the other things that we came up with in doing this stuff was how to think like an expert. And it's four steps. It's four very easy steps to think like an expert. And I'm not claiming that I'm an expert, although somebody wrote me, wow, you're an expert on thinking like an expert. Yeah, okay, good. But that's how the book, came. I was writing. Pardon me?
Yeah. That's how the book evolved. Yeah. And right. What I want to point out here too, before we take a little bit of a break, is that this is not such a big transition as you think. When you think about what is your next stage in life, see that mm-hmm. Joseph built his next stage in life from what he already knew. It doesn't sound, you know, Joseph Karabas was a senior research fellow at the University of Southern California at Annenberg Center for Digital Future. And he's got so much futurism and he's had so many companies. And you say, gee, it really doesn't sound like the same guy who might have written the sci-fi, The Augmented Man. But it is the same guy. Why? Because it's really a new chapter in the same life. And that's what I want mm-hmm. to explain to all of you. You've got building blocks. This new stage yes. may not sound to everybody else like it's so the same, but really it is just the next stage in a building block. Use it. You won't lose it. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the process and the latest book, and also, again, how to have the courage to make that happen. Don't you go anywhere.
Full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit. I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da, da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit. Cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about what? Well, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And what I want to tell you about now is something really spectacular that I'm excited about. I'm sending you to our website. Go to speakoutcommunication.com. Speakoutcommunication.com. It's spelled just the way it sounds, speakoutcommunication.com. No S, just with an N.com. And you will get all the information on my latest course, which is called How to Move, Touch, and Inspire Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere. It is that speak out communication course for people who are of a certain age and they are feeling that age when they communicate because people are not listening. So if your healthcare providers are not listening to you, if your family is not listening to you, if you've got a flex job or you're still working, and all of a sudden, younger workers or your older boss is not listening to you. Or like me, if you've got an advocacy platform, you want to make some change in this world, you're a volunteer, you can be heard. Speak Out Communication is a 5-minute recipe that will really change your life and the way you communicate with others. It is very clear, it is very short, and it's very inexpensive. So just go to speakoutcommunications.com and you will get the full view and the details of how to have this on-demand, online course. You can change the world with your words. Now, speaking of changing the world with your words, what a perfect segue to our guest. His name is Joseph Karabas. He is the author of 25 novels. One of them I love the most is The Augmented Man. We're going to have a chance to talk about that. But right now, we're focusing in on a nonfiction book of his, That Think You Do, 60 Ways to Be Healthy, Happy, and Hold Off Harm. You will find it on Amazon. We talked about his process, which was that he took things that he and his wife had been researching for marketing strategies for companies in his for-profit companies, and he saw that there were things in there that really revealed how people think, and he put together several articles into one book, That Think You Do. Now, Joseph, let's get back to that. There's a couple of things in there that I particularly loved. One, of course, was what you had just mentioned, which was 4 steps to becoming an expert. Give us a little bit of whet our appetite on those 4 steps.
You really enjoy this subject. You love to watch trees grow. You love to look at the trees and go out and feel the trees and look at the different kinds of leaves. I don't care if it's you do a lot of bird feeding in the backyard and you happen to be documenting it. It can be the most simple thing. But anything you do which you enjoy, and that's the key, something you enjoy, you are of necessity going to become an expert in it because you enjoy it. You want to learn more about it. You talk with people about it. You explore it. boom, you have a field that you're an expert in. Great. And of course, if you want to learn about it, you might take a course, an online course. You might take an extension course at your local college or university. You might just talk with people. You might go out to dinner with people who happen to be knowledgeable about it. You gain more and more and more information. Well, just start talking with other people about it. Somebody says something. You can be in the grocery store and you overhear a conversation, you know, about, I'm not sure when they say the meat has to be marbled a certain way, what does that mean? Oh, well, this is something I learned from my dad. He was a butcher. He was a meat cutter. He worked in the meat industry. Blah, blah, blah. Boom. You're an expert. How do you transmit that knowledge? Be friendly. Be courteous. Be kind. Be gracious. You may be more knowledgeable than they are, but do remember, in the world of expeditionary travel, the person who's the expert basically means I've been there one more time than you. Mm-hmm. So talk nicely, calmly, lovingly, caressingly, and be willing to learn as you're sharing. Because everybody who's listening to you, they'll have something fascinating about the subject that never occurred to you. Being an expert is an awful lot about paying attention to others interested in the same thing. And sure, they may come to you, they may pay a fee to sit in when you're talking, when you're sharing, when you're providing information. Excellent. And always be willing to acknowledge them. What do you have to say? What can you teach me about this? And all of a sudden, you've elevated them. So to be an expert, let others know or share their expertise as well. Simple enough.
Now, another thing that I absolutely loved from your book, and again, that Think You Do, 60 Ways to Be Healthy, Happy, and Hold Off Harm, is your use of lists. And I always make a joke. My lists have a list. One of the things that says make a list. The other thing on my list is that I do not prioritize. I will put things like, you know, buy a plot to be buried mm-hmm. in, and don't forget to get a pedicure. So I'm going to have a list that's not prioritized. You do much better than that. And I know I am listening to an audience of list makers. Tell us a little bit about making an effective list, because it makes us happy.
The thing about lists, and I found this with people all over the world in my travels, people will keep a list in their head, but they won't write the list down. And I'm of the school, if you don't write it down, it's forgotten. And you can write it down on paper, you can write it down on your computer, open up a little note window or whatever you have. But when we write them down, when we write down the items we want to do in a day, in the afternoon, over the course of a week, one of the great priorities it gives us, or one of the great things we can do, is we can prioritize. We can recognize this thing, this needs to be done now. This can wait a bit. A lot of times what happens with people is they begin to feel overwhelmed, especially people in our age group. They feel like, I got to do everything at once. I have to take care of this. I got to do this for the kids. I got to make, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're getting pulled in 50,000 directions. The reason they have that sense of being overwhelmed, and this goes into taking control of one's life, is because everything's coming at them. Everybody's demanding their attention. What really needs to be done? That's the thing you put on your list. What five are important to you? Put those down on the list. That's your main list. That's the big one. Now, I learned when I was a teenager from working with somebody, I used to carry 3x5 cards. And I had a pencil, you know, one of those mechanical pencils in my pocket. That's right, folks. I was an engineer. So,
so you needed a mechanical pencil.
Yeah, really. You know, I had to fit in with the crew. So anyway, I had that, and every time I had an idea, I would write it down. I would write it down. When we went into business, I would be listening to people. I'd write down the notes. I'd keep notes of everything that was being said. And now, as a full-time author, I do the same thing. I wake up in the middle of the night. There's a pad of paper beside the bed, pencil, still a mechanical pencil, and I write notes. I have three or four notes on my desk as we speak, three lists of notes. So the thing is, learn to prioritize, and as you were saying, just write them down. Just put them down. Don't worry about prioritizing when you're first putting them
down. Yeah, the next thing you have to do is you have to do it. One of the things that I did learn too, because I am a speaker, is take the thing that I hate to do the most and do it first. And that has been key to productivity for me, which is get rid of the thing, you know. And that doesn't mean that usually I'm happier at the end of the day because I get to the part of the list that I really wanted to do. But at the beginning of the day, I get to do all the chores and it's over with. I don't know. Do you handle it that way? Do you handle your list the same way?
Well, I do it pretty much the same thing. I do it a little bit differently because one of the things that I came out of business with was the concept of low-hanging fruit. And that is, what can I get done quickly so I can give myself an aha, good job, time to go and have, give myself a few minutes of relaxation. So it may be something I want to avoid. It may be sending an email that I don't want to send. It may be having to say something to a person that I know is going to make us a little uncomfortable, but it's easy to do. It's easy to do. Get it done. And that way it's over. It's done with. You have a check in the checkbox. You're ready for the next thing. And if it was a thing which could have been painful or had negative energy around it or whatever, okay, it's in the past. And you can go into something delightful.
What we're going to do, Joseph. We're going to go on to something delightful. We're going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to go on to our next segment. And we're going to talk about the augmented man. Now, this is something that I honestly did not expect to talk with you about today. But I love the concept so much. I did some reading about it and some in-depth. I want people to understand, again, how you were able to translate a career in futurism and AI and understanding how people think and how actually our neurons work, our brain work, into what is really a novel, a fiction novel that has a great deal of depth. So don't you guys go anywhere.
Full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da da da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. I have a wonderful month coming up. Many of the things that I'll be learning, I'll be sharing with you. I'm over keynoting in Minneapolis next week at the Gerontological Society of America. They're having their annual meeting, and we will be talking about gerontology and the role of gerontology in the new longevity. How can gerontologists step up to the plate and make sure we all have longevity equity? But I will also be doing a workshop, and that workshop is available to you, and that is speak out communication. What I've discovered is that as we get older, even if we are powerful people, I'm not talking about people who don't have a platform. Some of the biggest CEOs in the country have been responding to the issue of them feeling marginalized. All of a sudden, they don't know why. They're like deer in the headlights. I used to be so powerful, nobody listens to me in meetings anymore. Well, that is a form of subtle ageism. But with a 5-minute communications recipe that I give you, you'll be able to speak out anywhere, anytime, and really have an impact. Whether it's with your doctor or if you're a caregiver to an older parent and you're not being listened to with regard to their care, or whether you're in the throes of a major business operation and you want to negotiate and be heard. You will get that guidance from Speak Out Communication. Just take a look at the website, speakoutcommunication.com, and you'll get all the details. We'll also be in New York for a week at the Open-Ended Working Group on Aging, where different NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and the governments come together. There's 193 governments we're talking about here, and talk about the future of aging. And all of this will be on my plate and then eventually filtered to you for the information that you need to live a more powerful older age, whether you're a boomer, whether you're a super senior, or whether you're just feeling a little pokey at age 30. This is all important to you. Now, right now, I want to speak to our guest, Joseph Karabas, who's an author. He's really a transition expert because he transitioned in his own life from being what he calls a serial entrepreneur, a variety of businesses with his wife partner, to becoming a full-time author of many books. You can find them on Amazon. But one of them is called The Augmented Man. And I, as I told everybody a moment ago, was not expecting to speak about it because I don't know that it directly deals with successful aging, but I think it does deal with successful living. So, Joseph, this is really science fiction. It does deal with your interest in the military. And give us a little bit, a thumbnail of the plot, we'll say, and the protagonist of this book, The Augmented Man.
Happy to. The main character is a fellow by the name of Nick Traylor. He comes from a highly traumatized childhood, extreme abuse. And the government is in a war situation that they can't get themselves out of. They desperately need a way to end the conflict. So what one person comes up with is let's find people who don't suffer from PTSD, because the majority of people coming out of this conflict were suffering from PTSD massively. And he says, let's do that. We'll get people who are already so wounded that nothing that happens in war will affect them. So one of the people in the oversight committee says, well, where are you going to get these people? How, it sounds like you're going to make monsters. How do you do that? He says, you start with people who already think they are monsters. And of course, that is highly traumatized children. Their self-concept, because of what they've experienced in life, is that they must be horrible creatures to have been put through all this. So the government takes him and nine others, and then the science fiction aspect comes in. They genetically modify them, biologically modify them, so that they are indeed monsters, incapable of feeling any regret or remorse about anything they do in the combat scenario. Okay, everything's all said and done. They're successful. The enemy wants to sue for peace. And as part of the truce negotiations, they decide, well, we're going to give you these augmented men because we can't bring them back home. They're monsters. We don't want them back. So we'll give them to you, northern Maine forests where he can't be seen, where no one will find him. Except someone does find him and falls in love with him, recognizes the human, the man inside, the person, the gentle creature. And now Nick Traylor, all he knows is how to kill. He's designed to kill. He can't be around people because he will kill. So he goes back to the people who created him and says, change me or kill me, because I do not want to harm this woman. And there is the crux of the story.
Right. This is right where your
center
expertise
piece of the story,
yeah,
if you will, is
right. Where your expertise comes.
Yes.
From your past knowledge and your research, mm-hmm, of how people can change.
Yes.
And again, when you spoke about the issue of change,
exactly,
that people are fear change. This is so much in keeping with your original background and your knowledge. And again, I use this, so that listeners will be enticed to read the book, The Augmented Man, very interesting, but also to show that we have a concept called finding your life purpose as you age, mm-hmm, as if mm-hmm, this is totally unrelated to what your life purpose was before. As if you retire, you get your, mm-hmm, gold watch, all your past falls down a cliff, and then you have to start all over again. But no, even in this novel, it's a transition based on what you already knew and did in your past life of marketing, mm-hmm, research, understanding how people change and understanding how people think. But I have to ask one question, and maybe you can't reveal this. Does this have a happy ending? I don't know the ending. Does the augmented man have a happy ending? Does he become a good guy and get the girl?
He becomes a here's a spoiler. So if you don't want to know, you want to read the book, don't listen. But here's the spoiler. Yes, he does become a good guy. He manages to, as you say, transform himself. He can't stop being a physical monster. That's what they did to him. That's undoable. But he can psychologically, neurophysiology, change how he thinks. And that's the center, again, that's the center part of the novel. Does he get the girl? That would be a real spoiler.
We don't have,
And I'm going to hold off on.
Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about changing how you think. I'm going to take you back in time to your old life when you were really in the career business, not in the authorship business. When you were a researcher, as I said, a fellow at Annenberg, when you had your own businesses, and you were using your research for marketing and consulting to determine how people think. And the question I'm going to ask you is, in all of that research, did you get to a handle on what people seem very mystified about? And that is how to market to our generation, the boomer and older generation. Is it the same? Is it different? Is it changing? What's the future of marketing and speaking to us? Don't go anywhere, because this may be a commercial coming to you. We'll talk to you right after the break.
Full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about aging. We have several new articles posted. Take a look at the National Committee on Aging for the United Nations. That's NGOCOA-NY. We have our newsletter out. This is really interesting newsletter. It's on the rights and human rights of older women. And the hardest thing you're going to find there is how to define older women. Really, really an interesting article with some incredible data. And that you will find at www.ngocoa-ny.org. We also have the new online on-demand course, Speak Out Communication. So take a look at speakoutcommunication.com, and there you will get the details on our latest course to help you communicate better, whether it's in a private healthcare situation, one-on-one when you're meeting new people or new friends, if you're running for office at your HOA or retirement community, or if you are a CEO of a multinational corporation and you're finding that people are not listening to you quite the way they used to. It is a 5-minute recipe to really have an impact and be heard under any circumstances. Speakoutcommunication.com. All right. Now, right now, we're at our last segment, and I definitely wanted to delve into one of my favorite topics, although it makes, you know, my hair stand up on end, and that is marketing to the older consumer, the boomer, senior, whatever new words we, the people in the next stage. And why am I asking Joseph Karabas about this? Well, of course, we've been discussing his journey and his transition from his career as a serial entrepreneur to his life now as an author, and how you can do it too. But when he was in the thick of his research and his work and his consulting, a great deal of it had to do with how people think when they make buying choices, how to market, how to brand, how to get your messages across from that commercial point of view. So I was asking you, Joseph, what your experience has been with marketing to the baby boomer generation. Today, we're in a conundrum. We are the wealthiest, most educated, cohort, but people see us as patients and nothing more. What's been your experience?
My experience with companies across the globe is actually very similar to that. And I'm going to offer that 50, 100 years ago, seniors, elders, wisdom keepers, for lack of a better term, they were honored and respected. Then you had the Second World War came in, and of course, most of us were born shortly after that, and the world radically changed. Obviously so. Mass communications, television, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that happened was we lost the ability to focus and pay attention for long periods of time. However, as we age, as our bodies grow and change and develop, our brains are also growing and changing and developing. And the ability to pay attention increases. It never decreases, provided we are healthy, there's no organic damage. We are able to pay more and more attention. And because we've had so much experience in our life, we're able to apply all that to what we're reading, what we're hearing, what we're watching. What comes out of this when you're doing marketing, and I had, as I say, I had this experience all over the globe, was we're, as a group, we are more expensive to market to because you can't do the 15-second spot. You can't do the 10-second spot. You can't do TikTok, you know, 6-second thing. You have to be willing to engage us where we are. And that's the core of any kind of marketing. You have to meet your audience where they are. Where we are as a group, as a culture, is we want to know true value. Most people younger than us actually are not that keen on true value. They're keen on, ooh, this is a bright, shiny, and I do ask your forgiveness, everyone listening. We have learned to be patient. We have learned to be self-honoring and respectful as much as we can be. And one of the things that turns into from a marketing model is you have to give us the information we need, not what you think we need. Don't tell me what you want me to know. Tell me what I want to know. So we were entering very much in the European area, European countries. Companies like Adidas, who you think, well, that's activewear, that's sportswear. No, we're a large population, and we are still active, and we want to have the right kind of clothing. And that doesn't mean you have to give us shoes or sneakers or whatever that have special lifts to them or design. It means you have to pay attention to what we want to do with them. Do we want to run 50 miles? No. You know what I mean?
Yes. Now, you know, one of the fascinating things is about how quickly people make consumer decisions. Because we have so much information, we have what they call crystallized intelligence. We make decisions more slowly. Mm-hmm. And that, and you know, marketing people don't want that. They want somebody to do the quick grab. But we do have too much information to make decisions quickly. However, surveys show we make the decisions better, that our judgment is better, but slower. And that doesn't always work in this fast-paced world. I will say one other thing and throw this thought back to you. I saw the Academy Awards, many people did, and I liked everything, everywhere, whatever it is, anytime. But I have to see it twice because it was a very fast-moving movie. And I spoke to my daughter about it, and I didn't mention that part. And she said, do you know that they're saying this is the first movie made by millennials? And that opened my eyes because it was the first Academy Award-winning movie where the people, the main people, the directors, the writers, were millennials, not older. And it was very, very fast-paced, very difficult to follow, very wonderful. I loved it, but I'm not quite able to tell you why I liked it. I have to see it again. I think this is what you're saying. And this may be a breakthrough, Joseph, in my understanding of why marketers don't really care to market to us. That's not the way they learn to market.
Correct. Correct. It is a sad fact, as you mentioned earlier, that the marketing industry wants to get as much return in the shortest period of time as possible. And we as a group, as a collective, no, you tell me this again. I want to make sure I understand that. Let me read this through. We want more information because the more information presented to us, the better we're able to correlate it and recognize, you know, that is a good thing. I really should get that, but I also should get, and this is where I would say to companies, listen to those people who say, but I also should get, and that's your add-on. That's your upsell. Mm-hmm. You're going to buy this? Great. Here's this, which can do this for you as well. Oh, yeah, sure. Geez, I'll do that. I'd love that. So again, when you're marketing to us as a collective, slow it down a little bit. Don't just slow it down a lot. Slow it down a little bit, and your reward, your return on investment, is going to be exponentially better because, number one, you've demonstrated I am paying attention to you, I am listening to you, and I'm giving you what you want to make an informed decision. And that's what good, true marketing is really all about across any age group.
You know, and one of the things that I'll end our discussion here, because I do love the idea and the thinking about marketing to the older adult, is don't forget that we already had it. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're selling, we bought already many mm-hmm. years ago, sometimes many decades ago, maybe yep. in a different iteration. So it's not like I was when I was a kid. I didn't have anything. So you could mm-hmm. have shown me anything, and I wanted it to create my home. But I already have a crock pot. I've had 30 of them already. You have to show me now what is good and new about your crock pot. Whereas when I was a kid, look, it was my first time I was creating a home. So whatever you showed me was brand new, as you say, the shining object. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. that, and look, let's face it, it poses a difficulty. But before we end our wonderful conversation, I have to go back to you and say, look, you're always reinventing yourself. And that is why you're a beacon. What's mm-hmm. next? Are you writing another book? Are you thinking about your podcast? What's the next thing for you?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm constantly writing. I'm in the process of writing a book now. The Alibi takes place in Boston. And over the next year and a half, I think I have about 9 different books coming out. We've already had sufficient interest. We're thinking about doing a That Think You Do Volume 2. That will probably be out the beginning of next year. There's always something, you know. It goes back to finding something you enjoy and pursuing it. So long as you're willing to do that, you're going to be alive and important and valuable. You just have to make sure that you are happy doing it. Find your own joy. You'll bring joy to others.
Well, that's so beautiful. And it, again, it's a great segue to what I say every single week at the end of every show, which is get out there, kids, and make it happen.
Inappropriate.